Hi, I'm Gary Pete Peterson. There's a story behind that. There's so many Gary Petersons in these societies that I have to be Pete, and I don't mind. Okay. So the co-authors today are Dwayne Westfall and Hamid Farahani, and I don't know if you know them, but perhaps you do. So I have some objectives today. I want to, the reason I said not just Colorado, I'm going to try to extend some principles. So use principles derived from long-term experiment on our Great Plains to evaluate potential cropping systems for other climatic regions. So what we're going to do is dissect a summer fallow period into some different parts, try to establish some principles, and then take those principles derived from the dissection of the fallow period and apply it to some more intensive cropping regimes. And then finally, try to see what happens if we take this to some places where nobody's ever intended to use it. We'll see if we can get there. All right, so to start off with, when Alan called me and asked me if I would do this presentation, I said, most of you have heard most of this at some time in the past. This is kind of old. But he said it was okay. So I decided then to go ahead and put a little extra twist on it, just so it's a little different. So Dwayne and I have been working on this business of how to get rid of fallow for a long time. And so, in case you don't know what wheat fallow farming is in the Great Plains, it's one crop every 2 years. You plant wheat in the fall, you harvest wheat in the spring, and then you fallow the land for 14 months. So, in the old days, the land was bare for a very long time out of every 24-month period. This is a little calendar of what it looks like in terms of crop and fallow. So, the major problem with this wheat fallow business is it's really inefficient. And if you're able to store 25% of the moisture during the fallow period, you're really pretty good. Because we've had a lot of times when it's a lot less than that. It also has high erosion potential, grassy weed problems, carbon losses, and it's not very economically stable. In fact, the wheat fallow system in the Central Plains has been kept alive by government programs. Maybe you don't like to hear that, but that's kind of how it's worked. Okay, so this project that we started had these objectives. We wanted to maximize precipitation use efficiency. We wanted more out of every drop of water we got, whether rain or snow. We wanted to improve soil productivity, meaning that we wanted to reverse the carbon losses. And then, of course, increase economic return. And I've heard it almost in every talk today. You can design the nicest system, but if it doesn't make money for somebody, you might as well not do it. So the experiment looks like this. The experiment has a climate variable, a soil variable, and a cropping system variable. And so up in the upper right hand there, we have three sites. They have differences in potential ET, and you can see the numbers using the open pan evaporation. Those sites all have between 400 and 450 millimeters of annual precip. So they're alike in that sense. But they differ in how much water is lost to evaporation. And then in the lower left here, we have a soil variable at each site. And it's a catena of soils. The soils are not the same across all sites, obviously, but there's a soil sequence. We make all of our measurements based on the soil position, the upland position, the side slope where it's eroded, and then a toe slope, which is always the best soil in the world because you have all your organic matter there from upslope, and you have all your water. And then imposed on top of those soils, we have those cropping systems. And what they are is an increase from the wheat fallow to a three-year rotation with corn or sorghum. One of our sites has sorghum. And then wheat, corn, millet, fallow, and then an opportunity, which is a lot like this business that we heard about from North Dakota, where you try to be flexible and do something other than fallow. And then finally, a perennial grass treatment, and we're not going to talk about that today, but it's as an organic carbon check. We try to find out if our systems are going to be able to come anywhere near what a perennial grass is. And of course, the answer is not quite. There's a final variable here that's really critical. That's time. These experiments have been in existence now since 1985, or the sites have been in existence since 1985, and if we weren't able to do this over time, we wouldn't learn much because of weather changes, crop prices, hail, you know, all that stuff that goes on. And so time is important. And if you're trying to find out about soil productivity and carbon, then you need to study it for a long time in order to see any change. So no-till planting, no cultivation, herbicidal weed control, all the stuff you've heard this afternoon. What have we learned? Well, these are annualized grain yields. And I need to explain, whenever you grow a crop in wheat fallow, you really are only growing half a crop because it took you 2 years to get it. So what these yields are on this graph are the yields annualized. So for example, the middle one there, the three-year system, there are 2 years of crop. You sum the yields, you divide by three. The other one over there, you sum the yields of the three crops and divide by four, so that you've got them on an annualized basis. Well, you can see there's a really nice increase there. The increase from the 2 year to 3 year there is roughly 75%. Now, in our continuous crop or opportunity, we use some forages. Well, forages don't have grain. So then if you want to compare them with your systems that are mostly grain crops, we need to look at annual biomass, above ground biomass. So it's probably not any surprise to you that if you crop every year, you're going to improve it even more. So the question is, how has it been possible to produce more with no increase in precip? In other words, you know, Bob told you earlier, you got to have water to make yield. In fact, the more T you have, not E, the more T you have, the more yield you get, right? That's why they grow more in the East. In fact, it's easy to farm in Ohio. Okay. So the answer to this is, what can we get out of these experiments? Yeah, you know, those experiments are interesting for Eastern Colorado and so forth, but what I'd like to do today is use the rest of this time to see if we can find some principles here and do something with them. So along comes Hamid Farahani. And Hamid Farahani was working for ARS at the time. He was located in Fort Collins. He got interested in working with Dwayne and I, and he said, well, he's an engineer and he really knew how to handle data sets, so let's just really take this apart. So, okay. And this is one of the best decisions Dwayne and I ever made, was to have Hamid take over this stuff and do it. So I can't take credit for anything that I'm going to tell you now. It's all Hamid's work. So he took this, this is the wheat fallow system, and we've got a July harvest, and then we've got September, and we've got May, and by the spring plant, that's when we would insert a different crop. And then finally a fall plant. So in other words, if you were in a wheat fallow system, this is what it would look like over a two-year period. So we'll call this first stage, from wheat harvest until the first September in the system, call it the orange, and maybe it'll become apparent to you why we did that. It's roughly 2.5 months. And during that time, you have high air temperatures. You know, it's in Colorado, and it's July, August, first half of September. It's hot. But you have a really dry soil surface. You've just come out of wheat. Everything's dry, wilting point. In fact, the surface soil's air dry, so you've got some space to put water. And so you've got a good condition. Well, we have a lot of soil water measurements, and during that period of time, over 12 years, we were able to save 10 to 35% of the water that fell out of the sky. You say, why does it vary so much? Well, when the rain comes down a bucket in a second, it runs off. You know? The other thing that happens, if you get a small shower happens, the wind picks up, the sun comes out, and there it goes. So if the water doesn't get into the soil immediately, you get some loss. Anyway, 10 to 35%. Then we take the blue stage. Now maybe you're getting the idea, it's getting cooler. We go from orange to blue. This period is 7.5 months long, and we run it from September to May of the next year. We've got low air temperatures. We've got a surface soil now that's hopefully at field capacity. We hope it rained, right? So we've got some water, but we've got a lower profile that's still able to store water. During that period of time, we're able to save 50 to 85% of the water we get. Now, a lot of this is early spring snow. The soil is not frozen, so when the snow hits, there's no impact. It just gets on there, melts, and goes in. Wally Greb at Akron showed a long time ago that this is a really good time to store water, right? Then we come to this stage. And this is from May now, and this is when, if we could get out of wheat fallow, we would plant a spring crop. We'll talk about that later. So what do you have? Well, now we're back to higher temperatures, okay? It's a lot like this on this end in the orange stage. But now we've got a wetter soil profile. In other words, the surface is at field capacity. We've got some water stored deep. And when I showed these data now to Dwayne Westfall, when I first showed him this, even before Hamid worked on the data, he didn't like it. Because most of the time we didn't store any water at all. Sometimes we actually lost. So here's the deal. You go out and you convince this farmer that they ought to be in no-till. And they spend a lot of money for some kind of herbicide. And they continue to spend money over here. Because when do the weeds come? They come in the late part of that fallow period. So here they are spending all this money to kill weeds, and they're going to actually store less water. It's going to go down. So the question is, why in the world wouldn't we want to plant a spring crop there? Okay, so based on these data, Hamid said, well, let's see what's going on. Now, a lot of times, people have assumed that when you go from wheat fallow to wheat corn fallow to wheat corn millet fallow, that what you're doing is decreasing the amount of time in fallow. Well, have a look here. Time in crop, 40% of the 24 months, 60% in fallow. Look at this one, 39 and 61, 38 and 62. So basically, when you extended these rotations, you didn't change the non-crop period of time, not at all. Basically the same. But now, look up in the upper right part of that slide. We've got the percentage of the rotation time that's in those different stages. Remember orange, blue, and red? 10, 31, and 19. So if you look at what happened in the three-year system, look what we did. We dropped stage 1 down to 7. We increased stage 2 from 31 to 42. Remember, that's the good time to store water. And then look what we did with old stage 3. We got rid of some of it. That's the period when it's most easy to lose water. When you go to the four-year system, it just gets better. We have dropped stage 1, which isn't a very efficient thing. We've really improved the stage 2 again, and we've dropped stage 3. Okay, well, that's part of the story. Now let's look at this part. When do we get our water? When do we get our water? Okay, so here's the two-year period, and now I've lumped the stages 1 and 2 because they're both positive water storage periods. So just clump those together. And then we keep stage 3 separate. And then we've got the precip received during the crop year. So here's the deal. You take the total amount of water that falls in a two-year period, whatever that is, and you figure out by looking at the weather data when it falls. So you see that in that two-year fallow thing, it's about a third, third, and a third, right? This is what happens when you go to this three-year system. 35, we get a big drop in, you see, we've changed the amount of time in stage 3, so we don't have as much of that wasteful period, and we've shifted so that we actually have a crop in the field when the water's falling. Look, we shifted from 32 to 42. Well, and you know where I'm going here. So here's the principle. Now, this is something you learned in your first agronomy class. The best thing to do with water is to use it when you get it. The soil is a really bad savings place because everything in there, the weeds want to take the water. If you're in Ohio, you get deep drainage. You get deep percolation. And in Colorado, you get evaporation, and you get weeds, you get all this stuff. So what we've done, as we've shifted from 2 to 3 to 4 year, we've actually shifted when we have non-crop, and we've shifted when we have crop, so that we're going to get the water during times when there's something there to use it. All right. Okay. That's the basic story. Now, so what can we say about that in the way of principles? So here's what we do. We've identified the proportion of time in crop and non-crop. And so now we're going to shift the term from fallow to non-crop. All right? And these periods are based on potential precipitation storage efficiency. You know, like we had the orange one, it's saved a little water. The blue one saved a little more water percentage-wise. And then the third one, it isn't very good. All right, so we do that. And then we identify the proportion of precip received during crop and non-crop periods. And you have to use your rainfall data from some experiment station to figure out when those might be. Then we can choose a cropping system that maximizes precip during cropping periods and minimizes non-crop periods with poor water storage. You see where we're going? Now, so what I'd like to do now is look at some different locations and see if we can determine whether wheat fallow works better in some places than others. And then, you know, we could think about different cropping systems that we might make work based on these principles. You're looking pretty skeptical out there. Okay, so now the rest of these graphs I'm going to show you look like this. The upper part labeled in red, proportion of system time and crop or fallow, that's looking at those numbers for Colorado that I showed you before, 10, 31, 19, 40 in crop. And then down here, this is the precip distribution by period. You've seen those numbers before, okay? I'm not pulling the wool over your eyes. Okay, now let's go out to Oregon. And this is a place I chose. I don't even remember what particular location, but the idea is that now we're into the Mediterranean kind of climate that Huggins was talking about, where you don't get any summer precip, but you get winter precip, right? And you got to get that snow melt to go on the ground, right, Bill? Otherwise, it just waste too, right? Okay, so now, if you take those stages, 31, 19, boy, that looks a lot like Colorado, doesn't it? Now, so why wouldn't it? The temperatures, you know, and all that stuff are the same. But look at what happens when you look at when they get their water. They get a lot more water in stage two than we do in Colorado. You buy that? Okay. And we don't have as much stage three fallow, and we've got a lot more time over there because, you know, you plant winter wheat, they've got a long winter, they're getting a lot of their precip in that winter, and so that part goes up. So does wheat fallow work in the Pacific Northwest? Well, I think Huggins just said that it still works pretty well, right? It's still not efficient. You know, we know that. But the point is that wheat fallow in that environment makes a lot more sense than it does in Colorado. Right? So now one time I had a farmer actually call me from the Pacific Northwest, and he'd heard something about what we did in Colorado with growing corn. And he said, "Do you think that corn would be a good idea in my area?" And I said, "I don't think so." And I could actually look at these kind of data and make that decision. Well, now I'm going to take you one more place. I've had the privilege of working with graduate students from Morocco. And Morocco has a Mediterranean climate. Only it's a little different. All right. So let's look at the proportion of system time in crop or fallow. And this is from Sitat, Morocco. And it's 15, 31, 25, 29. Then let's look at when they get their water. Now, at this particular place in Morocco, a lot of Morocco's this way, you notice that either in stage one or stage three, they basically don't get any water. You know, there's some months at that station that they've never recorded a drop of water, you know, over the years. That just doesn't happen, okay? And so when do they get their water? They get it in the cool time. It doesn't snow, of course, but it rains. And so they don't use winter wheat there. They use a spring wheat planted in the fall. They don't need vernalization. So they plant the wheat, it grows through that cool period, and it matures before you ever get to hot temperatures. So, does it work? Well, it looks like it works better than in Colorado, right? Now, there's still reasons that you might want to change this. What I'm trying to do is get you to think about dividing your crop period up into these different buckets and looking at it. I've got 10 minutes, okay? I'm going to make it. So then, Ratan Lal and Bob Stewart convinced two or three of us to write a chapter for a book. It's right here. And so in this publication, I went online and got some data for some places I'd never heard of, and I've certainly never been there. And so what I know about these places is I know the precip distribution, I know the amount of precip, and that's about it. Okay? So this is a place in China, and you compare this one to Colorado. And Colorado is the top line, so this is the percent of time. Boy, that looks a lot like Colorado, really? And then you look at when they get their rainfall. Oh, it doesn't look quite the same anymore. So their precip is not like Colorado. They get 30% of it here, 15, 35, and then only 20% of the precip while there's a crop in the field if they were to try to use wheat fallow. Am I confusing you? Okay, so it wouldn't be a good idea to try wheat fallow. So what would work? Well, when do they get their water? They're getting their water during a time that we call stage three in our little analysis. And so they need to find a system that would have a crop there at that time. Then I went to another place. This is some place in Spain. It's another dry place. We have Paco here. Maybe he knows where this place is. And so you can see what the comparison is again. And that is a proportion of time. Then you look at the rain, and you can make a decision about whether you think wheat fallow will work or some other system. And finally, here's one. Well, not finally. I guess I've got one more for this. This is a place in India, and you can go down the line here. You can compare, and you can see that they get 44% of their precip in that stage one. That'd be when you'd want to have a crop out there, right? You wouldn't want to have any wheat fallow stuff because you'd just be dead in the water. One more. This is from Israel. And you can see the proportions, and you can see they have two times when they get their water. They've got a big period right here and a big period there. It's kind of a bimodal precip distribution, and so you need a completely different kind of cropping system to take advantage of that water. Okay, I'm going to make it. All right. So what I'm suggesting is not that we have a system here that's something you can just use everywhere. What I'm suggesting, though, is that you can dissect a cropping system. You take any cropping system you want, and you dissect it based on non-crop and crop periods. And then using the kind of principles we've used here, you know, when is it easy to store water? When is it difficult to store water? And then we've applied it to six different places. And we can start to estimate when is the right time to have a crop in the field. And of course, whenever you got water, that's the best time, right? So my hope, and I don't know if Dwayne and Hamid share this hope, but I do. I'm hoping that I've upset you enough that you will start to think about a cropping system in terms of when is it most easy to store water, when do I get my water, and how could I fix it so that I would have a crop out there to use the water when I get it? Now, the answer to this in Colorado is one that the farmers don't like. Forages. And Bob and I even agree on this, right? You know, forages are pretty neat because when a drop of water falls, you've got something to use it, right? The other thing is, does hail bother forages very much? Not in Colorado. Might beat them up a little bit. And so the whole idea of a forage is you get continuous protection and you can get some pretty efficient water use. Now, that goes against the principles of lots of Colorado grain farmers because they don't like cows. Cows are work. Okay. You either have a rancher or you have a farmer. You know, there's nothing. So, Any questions? I'm done. Oh, yeah, good.
I'm curious, in eastern Colorado, at your three sites where you had the weak fallow versus the three-year rotation and the four-year, what has the proportion of weak fallow declined?
Okay, so Bill is asking the question whether or not anybody is really adopting these systems. What is the proportion of change?
I had the same question.
There's probably our systems, wheat, corn, fallow, not necessarily. But developing into a three-year rotation where you have a wheat, summer crop, and fallow, there's been an increase of probably 35% to 40% and a like decrease in fallow. So it's happening. Let me tell you how they do it, though. One farmer explained to me once, "We've learned a lot from you, but we don't do it your way." And so what he was saying was that sometimes they mix. They'll grow a summer crop after wheat, completely no-till. But then when they come into a period of fallow, they'll mix in some tillage, just because they think it's cheaper or it's easier to kill a certain weed. So they've shifted to three-year systems with a winter wheat, a summer crop, and a fallow period. That's been the major shift. There are a few farmers that have gone continuous. They are actually in continuous cropping, but those are still rare.
Okay. Hey, Gary, do you have a rule of thumb of what proportion of your trees should fall in your crop period before you say, "Nah, that's probably not good enough"? If you have that one,
yep.
It's kind of hard. I mean, 36%, the crop would be 36%, and 36% of the rain fell on that crop. Do you have a rule of thumb you go on?
I don't. I'd just be guessing if I said something. I'd rather not guess. Yes, Megan.
They're following logic to the extreme. Should they stop growing wheat and only grow summer crops?
Yes. No. The reason wheat is so important, and it's part of this diversity thing, the wheat is the crop that provides the most cover. And so if you grow wheat and if you use a stripper head, it's particularly good at providing cover. And so we actually have a wheat-based system, and I don't believe we can have enough cover without wheat. I think that's really critical. It also diversifies the market situation for yourself. What I think really would work, though, is a lot more forage. I really do believe that. Okay, so I've been standing between you, not lunch, not dinner, but a business meeting. So here you go. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter.